All right, welcome to another edition of the Streaking the Lawn podcast. Again, my name is Pierce, and with me again, as always, I've got Caroline. How's it going, Caroline?
Hey, what's up?
Hey, not too much. And you're going to introduce our wonderful, fantastic, extra special guest this week.
I am. I'm super excited. Today we have our first female guest to the Streaking the Lawn podcast. I'm super stoked. This is great. Chelsea Shine Wilson. She is married to Tyler Wilson, who played baseball at UVA, if you know the name. Chelsea played basketball at UVA, lots of UVA connections. She's currently working for ESPN3 and helping in calling ACC basketball games. She's done both men's and women's. So Chelsea, thank you for taking the time out to join us today. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you guys for having me on.
Of course. Absolutely. So I guess the first question, give us a little bit of background about yourself. How did you make the decision to go to UVA? Like, what drew you to Charlottesville? And kind of take us through a little bit of your journey through undergrad.
Yeah, I grew up right outside of Philadelphia, up in Pennsylvania, and was recruited to play basketball. Probably by the time I was a sophomore in high school is when I realized playing in college was a possibility. So went through the whole recruiting process, which is also something that seems to have drastically changed, even just since the, 8-9 years ago that I was going through it. But came to UVA, ended up loving it. The team, the distance from home, the fact that it was in the ACC school and such an ACC conference and just such an academic school. I felt like I was kind of getting the best of both worlds. So came down and loved my 4 years. I played 3 years for Debbie Ryan, who was coach here for over 30 years. And so it was really cool to get to be on her teams and have that connection in a sense with alumni and hear her stories. You know, she was a coach and part of the game, prior to Title IX, during Title IX, after Title IX. So just so much history there. And she taught us a lot. And then my fourth year was Joanne Boyle's first year, the current coach of the women's basketball team at UVA. And so, again, you go through a coaching change, there's always challenges that come with that, but there was also a lot of really positive things that came from that too. And we had a really good, year, my fourth year, narrowly missed the NCAA tournament, but upset Tennessee that year, which was probably my favorite memory. And over time, they were ranked, I think, fourth in the country. And so just a lot of really great memories, loved the girls that I got to play with and, just my experience as an undergrad. I was a sociology major, met my husband at UVA, some of my very best friends that were in our wedding, who I'm still friends with today, all through UVA. And so just a really great community. We got really involved in Athletes in Action and FCA. And so I feel like, I grew a ton in my faith and understanding what that was and deeply, kind of understanding what that meant, how to even playing basketball and for Tyler playing baseball, what that meant. And so it was really cool to meet a lot of my close friends and future husband in that context and walk through life in college. And so I loved my time there and obviously we loved it so much. We ended up never leaving. So we're still in Charlottesville.
that's the dream, honestly. Like I'm trying to figure out ways to get back. I was also a sociology major. So shout out the UVA social department. but so what did you do directly after graduation? Like how did the whole process of getting involved in the, did you always want to get into the broadcast side? Like what was your first step after graduating and then also like realizing that goal and that dream and building that all in or fitting that all in with Tyler traveling for baseball?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. My fourth year, I sort of knew I always, maybe not always knew, but I knew I loved working with people. I knew I loved being active and kind of moving around. I wanted to do something in sports. I think I realized that junior or senior year. And so my fourth year, I ended up getting an internship through like school. Like I was with Jay James at the WINA radio station, just doing different sports things, covering some stuff. And I really enjoyed learning that side of things. And at that point realized I would love to do something in TV and in broadcasting and in sports. As soon as basketball ended my fourth year, it was sort of, I'm sure you guys may have had this moment of, oh my gosh, I need to find a job. Like, what am I going to do? And Coach Boyle was actually tremendously helpful in helping me and encouraging me to put together a demo reel, which our video services crew helped me. I had no TV experience, so I put together a demo reel, put together my resume. She took it down with her to the ACC meetings, coaches meetings, kind of put my name out there, and nothing came of that right away. And so in the meantime, over the summer, I ended up getting an internship with the Virginia Athletics Foundation at UVA, which is doing the fundraising side for athletics, for scholarships, student athletes, scholarships, facilities, all of that stuff. And I actually loved my time working there. I ended up working there about 4 years. Internship turned into full time, and just loved learning the business side of things. I was so fortunate to be a full scholarship student athlete on the women's basketball team, and kind of understands where that's coming from as a player, but you don't really get it. You just, you know, you're there to play basketball, you do your thing, and then you graduate. And getting to see the whole business side of things, seeing how much my scholarship truly cost as being out of state, understanding where that money is actually coming from. You know, it's not funded by the state. It's coming from private donations. Just all of that was fascinating to me. So I loved being able to stay involved in athletics, and especially at UVA, and just understanding all of that. And then in the meantime, around December of that first year out of college, I got a call from somebody with the ACC, and they were looking for talent. And so I ended up getting, you know, a couple of opportunities to do some ACC women's games streaming live online through like the ACC digital network platform, which was awesome experience. I guess I did a halfway decent enough job, because the next year I got a couple more, and then got one or two TV games with Raycom Sports Network, again, all ACC women's hoops. And then it kind of just grew and grew from there. And I've loved it. So for the past 3 years, I was able to kind of do both. I worked full time at the Virginia Athletics Foundation, and during the women's basketball season, those opportunities would kind of grow, but I could make more or less both work. And then as it got to grow last year, it just got to be too much, you know, and I realized I kind of had to make a decision and wanted to pursue and not be turning down opportunities with women's basketball. Plus, it gave me the flexibility to be able to travel with my husband, Tyler, and baseball. And we've been apart for every season he had been playing before that. So that was, last year was the first year we got to do that. So it was a pretty cool, pretty cool dynamic.
That's awesome. Do you remember what the first game is that you called?
Yes, I do. It was Duke at Virginia Tech. I mean, it would have been a year after I finished playing. And so many of those girls I had played against. And I remember like when we were doing the open of the game, you like pre-record the opening 2 minutes, they show highlights, all that. And I didn't know what an open was. You have no idea what to expect. I've gotten to work with the producer of that, who produced that game since then. He's still in it. And he and I laugh all the time. I'm so thankful for, you know, his support and walking me through it. But I can imagine that game was just, I've come a long way, I hope.
But I can only imagine it's like so stressful. Like just the first time when you're in there, and how often do you, oh my gosh, Pierce is probably like, Caroline, stop asking so many like just butting in questions. But like how far in advance do you find out who you're calling the game with? Like, is it always the same people? Like, how often does that change?
Caroline's like, coming for your job.
I think it's really, really cool. Like, I just, and it's such, like, it's such a great point of saying like, those are people that you played with. And I think that gives you such a really interesting, not to knock the like, the older crowd, you hear like calling games, and especially on the men's side, it's just, you know, like you got the Bill Rafferty's and stuff like that. Like Bill Rafferty did not play against anyone that's playing. Like, so to have that kind of insight of like, oh, you know, you have a feeling of, or kind of a feel for like what the players might do.
Yeah.
Played them.
Like, yeah. I will say that that's been one thing. So the first couple of years after I was doing it, you know, players would still be on the team that I either played against or remembered them. I'm at a point now where I didn't play against any of them, but it was really cool to be able to, I think I'm still, you know, not so far enough removed that being an analyst, just having played gives you that credibility. But certainly there was that level of being able to say in broadcast, you know, man, I remember when I played against so-and-so and she's just so tough. Like, to be able to speak from personal experience, I think for sure added a really cool element to give you that credibility. You know, but that was a great question about just learning how a broadcast works and learning the timing, and even in the preparation. That's something that took a year or two for me to really get down. You know, when you're taking on something new like that, I started wanting to, and I would only have like 4 to 6 games. Like the first year I had 4 or 5 games. The next year I might've had like 5 or 6 or 7. And so at this point I've got 2 to 3 games a week, and most announcers, especially the ones that are like on ESPN, have same thing, 2 to 3 all year long, whatever. And so your prep looks a lot different and you're just seeing a lot more games. And so you're not having to watch as much film or remember as much stuff because you've already seen that team play, you know, at some point during the year. Earlier on in it, though, I didn't know what to expect in terms of, well, when do the SIDs have their game notes ready? When can I start asking questions? When am I going to hear from the producer? Oh my gosh, the game's in 2 weeks and I haven't heard anything. Well, you don't hear from the producer until like 2, maybe 3 days before your game, because they also are covering teams leading up to that game. And so really you're not hearing information and you're not kind of focused on your game until it's the week of, or it's the next game up on everybody's docket. And that took some adjustment for somebody like me who, you know, you're type A and I wanted to be prepared.
You want to get everything ready to go and like ducks in a row.
Yeah. I'm like trying to like fill out my boards and, you know, the stats aren't going to be updated because they have like 3 games to play. So I had to learn, all of that. And then just learning what a broadcast was like, what's an open, you know, how does halftime work? Talking while the producer's talking in your ear in the middle of the game, like having to have that adjustment, learning what types of things, storylines I need to be prepared for and have ready ahead of time so I can be on the same page with the producer. Just learning the flow of the game is, and a broadcast in general, I think is the biggest learning curve of getting into it. And it's, I think, the type of profession that you're just thrown to the fire and you figure it out. And that's the best way that you learn. You know, and I do think as schools, I think UVA has some classes now too in the Curry School, but schools, certainly if you major in communications or something like that, you might have had a little bit more exposure, but at the end of the day, until you're actually doing a live full broadcast and you're going through it, you kind of just don't know what to expect. So that's half the battle, I think, right there, that I've definitely, once you've done it a year or two, you get that under your belt.
That's awesome. I saw that you got to talk to Debbie Ryan, who you've already said that you played for, which is really, really cool. Experience to get to interview her. And then I saw you talked to Don Staley, obviously UVA legend. So what was that kind of like, doing those types of interviews? And then have you met Doris Burke? Because she's good.
So that game, that was Temple, South Carolina at Temple a couple weeks ago. And I was so excited for that game. I had met Tanya Cardoza, who is the Temple coach and also played at UVA. And then obviously Dawn Staley, I knew who she was and a UVA alum. I had never actually met her though. So I did have a fangirl moment and had to get a picture with her. Awesome. But it was pretty cool. Obviously she's one of the best in the game. It's so cool to see what she's been able to do down at South Carolina. And then there were just so many connections at that game. Obviously Debbie Ryan was there because both of the head coaches played for Debbie Ryan on the national championship team, or the national runner-up team, when I think it was 91 when UVA went to the national championship game and lost to Tennessee in overtime. Dawn and Tanya were both on that team. So just, that was super cool. And then Paul Murata, who was our athletic trainer at UVA, I think all my 4 years, he was there. And then he had been at Temple with Dawn Staley, and then he ended up coming to Virginia, and then he went back with Dawn to South Carolina after I graduated. He ended up coming, he's not with South Carolina anymore, but he ended up coming to the game. And then our strength and conditioning coach, who my 4th year was there for 1 year, Katie Fowler, who is now at South Carolina. And so she's a strength and conditioning coach there. So it was just crazy to see so many of these connections, at that game, and it was a fun one to call. And yes, I have met Doris Burke. I met her, I believe it was last year. She was at the ACC Women's Basketball Media Day, also had a fangirl moment, and she was awesome. I mean, she came right over, and it wasn't about Doris. It wasn't about Doris Burke. She sat right down, shook my hand, and said, "All right, tell me your story. What are you doing? What's your path? Like, where do you want to go?" Asking me all these questions, and really just seemed like she knew how important it was to be asking those questions, to be encouraging, to be offering her advice, because she's obviously gone through it. So it was really, really cool to just chat with her for a few minutes, hear more about her story, and I think she is absolutely one of the best in the business. And I love, love, love listening to her call games. She's one of my favorite.
100% agree.
Awesome. Well, we could switch gears for a moment and talk about the current women's squad, who this has been an interesting year, I think, for the Virginia women's team. I think coming into it, a lot of people were saying, all right, this is put up or shut up time for Coach Boyle. You know, they were right around that top 25-ish mark preseason expectations nationally. And I think UVA fans were thinking, all right, we need to see some sort of, you know, making the tournament success in the ACC. And it didn't start out so hot with some losses to some good teams, some losses to maybe some not so good teams. And now they're 4-0 in the ACC. So they're on this great, you know, 7-game win streak and things are looking up. I wonder what your thoughts are about the sort of up and down nature, maybe to Coach Boyle's whole tenure at UVA, but also this season. And is it indicative of them turning things around? Have they just sort of gotten lucky with playing some of the weaker teams so far in the ACC? What are your thoughts so far with them?
Yeah. So I've gotten to cover them kind of throughout some of the non-conference, and then certainly we'll cover them later in the year. You know, I look at the 4-0 start, which has been a hot topic in the conversation just around the league in general. Their best start since 2000 when they started 9-0 in the ACC, and awesome start for sure. You know, their schedule is definitely backloaded. They've got four top 25 opponents, currently ranked top 25 opponents left to play. So they'll have a tough stretch on the backside of their schedule. Certainly winning on the road against NC State's a big win, you know, and taking care of business at home and beating Syracuse, a team that is receiving votes, and just beat Florida State, who's ranked 13th, is a big win as well.
Sure.
I kind of look at that and think, you know, I'm optimistic, but I also look at that and you have to have not caution, but they're 11-6. They finished 7-6 in the non-conference. And to me, I look at 4-0 and I say, if only they had done what they were supposed to do in the non-conference, you could be sitting at 4-0 in the ACC a little bit more excited about what's to come, because, you know, if they had won just three more of their games in non-conference, you have 14 wins at this point. And I think you really have to get to 20 wins minimum. And I think be at least 500 in ACC to have an NCAA tournament resume. And so at 11-6, they're going to have to win 9 more ACC games. You figure you get maybe one game in the ACC tournament. So that's hard to do, to win 9 more games, especially with a backloaded schedule. And again, if you flip that around, and like I said, if they had won even just 3 more of those non-conference games, which I absolutely think they were capable of doing, they had some really close games and some games that I think they kind of let get away from them. You could be a little bit more excited because it wouldn't be quite as daunting. You could give up some of those losses maybe down the stretch to a couple of those ACC teams and it wouldn't hurt you as much. It just feels like there might be a little bit more pressure on every single ACC game, but I don't want to take anything away from what they've been able to accomplish. They seem to have a lot more balance right now. Felicia Iaton's playing really well. The two sophomores, Dominique Toussaint, Jocelyn Willoughby, they've just gotten a lot more consistent. So definitely they're clicking and hitting stride at the right time, and off to an awesome start, which you have to be pleased about. They're definitely putting themselves, what could have been a really detrimental looking at non-conference at 7-6. You know, if they'd started ACC even just 2-2, you're kind of wondering. So they've at least put themselves in a position to continue competing every day here to keep their games up and try to get into the NCAA.
You mentioned a couple of players, obviously, that have been playing well lately. There's 4 women on the team who are averaging over 10 points per game. Who would you say has been the big, like, is the most important cog when it comes to the offense? And can you speak to a little bit about your first year? We're playing under Joanne, and I know they've kind of instituted the pack line themselves, and they're holding opponents under 60 points on average. How much does the team buy into that defense thing as much as the, like, is this, you know, are they getting the buy-in that the guys are getting as well when you see, like, what this defense can do?
Yeah, so to answer the first part of the question, I do think they're a more, you know, scoring by committee, but I think Dominique Toussaint has proven to be a player that can take over a game. But you also have some other players like Ja'Kyra Brown, who's done that. Aaliyah can hit big shots. Jocelyn Willoughby, I think, has just more potential even that we could see from her. You know, I think Dom is just at the, can run the point or play off the ball. And I think she impacts the game in the way she passes the ball, pushes the tempo. And so I think she's just really important when she's taking care of the ball. That's really important. She's done a better job of that in her last five games or so. And so, but for them to have balance right now, I think is huge for four players to be averaging in double figures. I think they finished the year last year and only had one player, or there was a point in the season last year where they only had one player in double figures. And so, in a league like the ACC, you definitely need to have balance and you need to have multiple scoring options. In terms of the defense, yeah, I think that's always been a point of emphasis, since Coach Boyle has gotten there. I remember my fourth year, we played a 1-2-2 zone, actually. It was like, that was our identity. That was what we did. It was a really active 1-2-2 zone. There was trapping, and that was, there was so much buy-in there that it was sort of like we, that was what we sort of staked our identity on. And I think that's important for a team to have something that you have your identity rooted in terms of the way that you play the game. And so when all else fails, you can always come back to that one thing that you're really good at. And so I think that they've continued to try to instill that. I know like the year or two after I graduated, they still were trying to do the 1-2-2, but they had unfortunately some injuries. And so their personnel to play the 1-2-2 changed a little bit, and it wasn't as effective because they didn't have the pieces to play that because they were hurt. So it has changed. And I think she's definitely implemented a defense that they have now, and they call it the buzz a lot. So you'll see sometimes they'll do like trapping, and they'll run some zone as well. And so I think that there's definitely buy-in there. And I think the more teams see the success with that, and they more that they can kind of root their identity in that, the more that you know, put energy and passion behind it. And even if something's not going well on the offensive end of the floor, you always know you can come back and you know, on the defensive end, play that. So I think there is buy-in there, and I definitely think that you're seeing, you know, the team do a really good job, obviously, with the numbers, the way that they're limiting opponent scoring. So, yeah, it's changed a little bit since my fourth year, like I said, because we played a lot of zone, and there was a lot of buy-in. But I also think it's important to evaluate personnel, you know, especially with Felicia Iaton and the look that she can give inside it with her size. So, yeah.
So, and now that Coach Boyle's been here for 6 years or so, what would you say to the fans who are maybe frustrated with the lack of top tier success that you know that we want in all our sports at UVA? It seems to be the UVA thing, right? It's ACC championship across the board. Yeah. You know, that's a pretty big window of time to give a coach time to install some success. I mean, taking over for a Hall of Famer like Debbie Ryan is a tough ask for anybody. But are you still in, you know, preaching some patience mode? I know they've had injuries in some of those years that have really derailed them. They've had some transfers. There is a lot of, I don't know, reasonable excuse making that can be done.
Sure.
Or are you feeling the it's put up or shut up time? Like you said, they've got to get 9 more ACC wins to feel comfortable. Well, go ahead and do it. You got 7 more games against unranked teams. You got plenty of opportunities to upset a couple more ranked teams. Do it if you're going to be a success here. Where are you sitting on that as a alum, as a fan? I'm sure of the program.
Sure. Yeah. No. I think it's a great question, and I don't think that the coaching staff is naive to that either. And certainly with Tim Taylor back as an assistant, he's been through a bunch of different waves of both some great success and some tougher stretches. So, you know, I think we haven't, the university or the women's team hasn't been to the NCAA tournament since 2010, which was my second year. That was the last time we went. And so none of these girls have ever experienced what that's like and what that takes. And so that's actually a part of the dynamic too, that, you know, you have to consider, coaches have to put you in a good position to get there and to have success. That's what their job is. And it is a really long stretch not having been back to the NCAA tournament. And you're right, when you look at, the university and the amenities, the facilities and the conference and all of that, I don't see that why there's no reason that Virginia shouldn't and couldn't be getting back up to more consistently getting back there. Again, I remember my first and second year, it was like a given. But at the same time, then not getting back my junior year and then even missing it again my senior year, it was sort of like, whoa, that was being an underclassman, being led by Monica Wright, players like her who just put a team on her back. I think I realized, well, this isn't just a given. Like, this is actually a huge honor. It actually takes a ton of work to get there, let alone to stay there consistently year in and year out. And the amount of pride, and that's the expectation. And so, you know, this team has gone to the WNIT a few times, so they've had some of that postseason experience. Not that it's the same at all, but I think that winning culture is something that isn't there right now, just because when you think about, none of the players have experience getting to the NCAA tournament. I'm optimistic about this sophomore class, especially because I think that you've got some gamers on the team. I think you've got some, you know, tough players who want to win. And, you know, I think hopefully this year, again, that they can continue down the stretch of conference play and make some things happen. But certainly it's the expectation. I think Coach Boyle would be the first to admit that's the expectation, and are bummed that they haven't gotten there yet. You know, I would preach to the fan base continued support. And, you know, obviously none of us can control the decisions that are made or whatnot. I loved Coach Boyle. I loved my experience with her and Coach Ryan. You know, I love their whole staff. A couple new assistants have come in throughout the couple of years, and I've loved all of them. And so, you know, I know what it was like for me as a player to have the support of fans and how much of a difference that made. And so I can also imagine that it's difficult when it's not free to come to games, but, that fans want to see success there. And I think I'm sure it doesn't necessarily make it easier either when you see the success on the men's side, the sustained level of just consistent success there. And you say, well, why not on the women's side? What do we need to do to make that happen? So, I mean, I'm optimistic and hopeful, and would hope that people continue to go support, because those girls want to win. Those coaches want to win. They're trying to win. They're doing what they can every day to win. And it's a really special experience to play at JPJ and play at the University of Virginia. And personally, the reason it was that was because every night we had tons of fans there, and it made it such an awesome environment. So I would hope that people continue to kind of hang on, if, you know, true fans, and through thick and thin. And, you know, I've gotten to meet a decent amount of fans too, who have shared stories from, you know, back when Debbie coached, you know, again, through some great seasons, through some not great seasons, and everything in between. And, you know, it's special to hear all those stories from fans who have been through it all.
Absolutely. And you've got this blue chip number one player up in Greene County, right up the road.
I know.
I know they're recruiting. I know that, I think Samantha Brunel, she just, I think today or recently announced like cutting her list to top nine, and UVA is still in it. So hopefully there's hope there. You know, you never know with recruiting. So hopefully there's plenty of reasons for optimism still.
Yep.
So we're going to shift gears again. You mentioned, you know, the continued success on the men's side. The guys played last night, beat Syracuse to go 4-0 in the ACC. They're 15-1 on the season, only loss coming on the road at current number two, West Virginia. What is it that, so in watching these games this year, I feel like there's just something, I don't want to use the, like, je ne sais quoi, but there's just something about this offense that feels different. Obviously, the defense is the same, if not, honestly, I think better than the previous seasons. Mm-hmm. I think this might be the best defense that Coach Bennett has had. Started to sound way more like a hot take, like, 3 weeks ago when I said they continue to show, like, and now everyone's like, this might be the best defense they've had. I will still maintain that no one is as good individually as Malcolm Brogdon, but I think as a whole, they have an answer for every type of scorer. So they've got a guy who can defend the quick guard. They've got guys who can defend at the rim. They've got good perimeter defenders. Mm-hmm. So I think as a whole, the unit is better than I think we've seen at any point under Tony Bennett, which is saying something. But the offense feels a little different to me this season. Is that something that you've seen in watching the guys? And what do you think that is, if you could point at like one thing that feels a little bit different this year?
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. And I've heard a lot of people say that as well about just the defense actually being possibly one of the best that Coach Bennett has had here. Offensively, they've been fun to watch for sure, and especially I've loved getting to cover them. Certainly the non-conference games that I did weren't, not all of them were quite as competitive as, you know, games like you saw last night, but you just have those pure scores. I mean, Kyle, and they're it's scoring, but it's also understanding your roles. I think there just seems to be a sense of maturity there as well. There's a level of patience, obviously patience in the system and patience on the defensive end, but I think that affects the way that they even play their offense, which you can see, that guys just have an understanding of who's supposed to be getting the ball, what's, you know, in rhythm taking shots. And then you just have like guys like Kyle Guy who are just pure scorers and can do it on, you know, every different level. And so, and then certainly when a guy like DeAndre Hunter goes off or Ty Jerome goes off, it just takes all that pressure off and adds to it even more. And so a little bit more transition this year too. I know that's not ever something that Coach Bennett says we're not going to run transition, but they just have Nigel Johnson and his ability to push the pace. I think you're just seeing some more of those opportunities, which again creates a lot easier offense, quicker offense. So you're getting maybe one or two extra possessions every time Virginia is taking a quick bucket in transition. So stuff like that, I think, is probably attributed to why they've been able to put a little bit more offensive output before. But you know, I just love how trained the fans are at Virginia to just hear far more about defense, because it's actually affected me, I think, as well. Like in games that I watch, like I love defense. And, you know, maybe part of that too, as a player, my fourth year, like I said, defense was our identity. It was the 1-2-2 zone, but like our coaches preached that. That's who we were. That's where we kind of stake that identity. And so I think maybe that, and then a combination of what we've seen over the past few years with the men's program, is just people love it now. And I think it's awesome, because it's a lost art and it's not necessarily on the forefront of most fans' minds of other programs.
It's so fun. Like when Pierce and I were there, we lived through several Gillen years and a Lato year. And it's just such an interesting, like,
some of them were fun.
Some were fun. There were some, I remember my first year, we upset like 3 ranked teams in a row, like all on buzzer beaters. And like 2 of them were at U-Haul, and it was awesome. But just kind of, I absolutely 100% agree. Like the fans love the defense, and also not just the fans, but like seeing Mamadi Diakite like whipping a towel around his head on the bench after a shot violation against. Like, and that's the thing that, you know, Virginia gets a bad rap in the national media sometimes, especially last year. I think there were some struggles. There wasn't as much of an identity offensively as sometimes I feel like London was left to kind of salvage things. There was a lot of deferring, I think, that went on, which happens. It was a young team minus London with his leadership role. And he's such a phenomenal player and good dude but sometimes when he'd get the ball with like 7 seconds left, I'd be like, come on, guys, I can have to shoot it.
Yeah.
The post presence issues after Austin Nichols was dismissed. And and then obviously Isaiah with the illness down the stretch. Do you think this is the first time that Coach Bennett has appointed captains, if you want to use that term, with Zay, Devin, and Jack? And he's consistently talked about them being comfortable in their identity and the defensive team identity. How important, or what kind of impact can senior leadership like that on a team have on such an, I don't want to say impressionable group of, but there's a lot of younger players and not a lot of experience. So how beneficial, you mentioned playing under Monica Wright, like as a player, when you have 3 guys like that, like how big of an impact can that have that we're not necessarily maybe appreciating?
Yeah, for sure. I think it has a big impact. And the fact that this is the first year that he's done that makes it a big deal. And so the players know that. And there's like an extra level of respect there, I think, too. You know, Devin Hall has been in the program for a long time. Obviously, Isaiah and Jack have as well. And so they know what they're doing. And Devin's been a part of all of these runs, these deep runs with the AGs and the Malcolms and the Londons. And so of course you're going to listen to him. And when Coach Bennett appoints those guys as having those roles, I think it just says a lot about what he, you know, that he trusts them and the way that he views them as well. And so having those, and again, Coach Bennett has the best sense of all of his team and his team dynamics. And so he obviously thought that this was necessary, and the timing of it, you know, must have been important. And so I think it's paid off, and I think it definitely does make an impact. Some years, obviously, he hasn't had to do it in the past, but there was also really defined roles, it seems like, in the past couple of years. Like, you could point to those couple of players who left the program the year before, and then there were already guys that we already knew were going to step in. And with Kyle and Ty being freshmen last year, you hoped for that, but you didn't assume that. You know, Isaiah definitely knew he would have a big impact, but you know, he's not going to give you 20 points a night. And Devin, because again, his scoring kind of over the years came along, you know, slowly but surely, and he wasn't in the forefront last year. I think he was even a guy that you knew and hoped would take over, but you didn't have that for sure as a London or a Malcolm or an AG type thing. So I would wonder if that was part of kind of defining those roles for those three guys as well. But it was funny. I don't know if you guys saw when I was just covering them in the non-conference, going back and watching some of their interviews. Somebody asked Kyle Guy and during one of their early media days before the season starts, just about the captains and all about that and the personalities of each of them. And he said, he said, like, if, you know, if something's wrong, like, you go to Jack and he'll like make you feel better. You know, Isaiah will like scream nonsense and get everybody hyped up. And then he goes, Devin is the one that, like, if you do something wrong, he will give you this look. Like, you don't want to make Devin mad. And, it was just funny to hear, even from a player's perspective, of the different personalities that they kind of have.
I love captains. And that's, I just love, one of the things that I was actually thinking about this driving back from Charlottesville last night, when it was me and 29, just the two of us heading back to DC. I made it in 2 hours without crazy speeding. So the consistent, like, and people have talked about, I'm sure everyone loves their teams and loves players that come through. I don't know. I just thinking about each senior day or fourth year day, whatever you want to call it, that Virginia's had in the past several seasons, and really the caliber of guys that have come through, where it's kind of, I joke that they sneak up on you, and by the end of their time at UVA, I'm like, this person was definitely my favorite Virginia basketball player. Like, it was like that with Joe Harris, and then all of a sudden you're like,
yeah,
slowly Malcolm Brogdon. So out of nowhere it's like, yeah, this is my favorite player who's ever played here. And so, like, I don't want to get way too far ahead of myself, but have I'm already like dreading Isaiah and Devin leaving, because I think that they're two guys that, especially when you look at Devin's side of it, putting in his, like, literally putting in his time, like, talk about someone who has just waited his turn and is, it's paying off in spades. Like, he's just phenomenal. Does a little bit of everything. But have you ever seen a player similar to Isaiah, like, what he does and how he leaves it all on the court, and the way that he plays the game? And like you mentioned, it's like, you know, he's not stuffing a stat sheet, and honestly don't think that he cares. And everyone calls him a glue guy, but I'm beginning to think that that's almost a little insulting, because he's so
glue
much
is the most important thing in whatever
metaphor. The X-factor.
Yeah. And I don't know, like, what is your, you know, you've seen him up close and some of the blocks and the stuff that he does. Like, how do you, have you seen, like, how do you quantify Isaiah for this team?
Yeah, I
answer.
Love watching
I need
him
answers.
Play.
Yeah.
I love watching him play, and I agree, like, the stats and stuff that don't show up but are the charges, or like my favorite part of Isaiah's game, and I think people appreciate this, but like covering them and just watching it, and now, like, I feel like I hone in on it. His ability to tip the ball on a rebound, offensive or defensive, and like place it to a teammate. I think, again, everybody sees it. You see that frequently, but like he does that more than anyone I've ever seen. And that's one of the best parts of his game. And it's just a knack for the ball. That's just timing. You know, it's doing it a ton. It's knowing where you are on the court, your positioning, and having awareness for where your teammates are. And he's saved probably, I don't even know how many possessions per game over this season so far, just doing that. And so it's stuff like that. It's taking the charges, again, like the personality of getting people hype and whatnot. But no, like, and you always hear Coach Bennett, like, with the whole, you know, we just need to like hook ourselves on Isaiah and follow him and let him kind of lead the charge. But I think there's just that level of consistency. You know what you're going to get from Isaiah night in and night out. Again, it's not going to be 20 points, but it'll give you 8 to 10 to 12, and he's going to get you 10 extra possessions that you might have that could convert into 20 or 30 points between Kyle and Ty and DeAndre. And it is. It's stuff that's not going to be quantified necessarily on a stat sheet. But I think, yeah, maybe not the glue guy, but I think he for sure is the X factor, and we saw the implications that happened last year when he missed the NCAA tournament, and not that you point direct or in those couple of games, and not that you point to that being the sole reason, but clearly that showed his importance more than anything.
Yeah. And you look at like what the thing that just blows my mind is like, he's such a good defender. Like what he did to Luke May, and then to see Luke May, like we joked, there were jokes on Twitter last night that were like, I think Luke May went off for a career high 32 because he looked around and saw Isaiah wasn't there to harass him the entire 40 minutes or whatever.
Yeah.
And just to have him be able to hold like players too. It's just, I think it's so impressive.
Hey, he's got to be front runner for conference defensive player of the year, right?
National player of the year. I don't know who you put. I feel like if the best defender on the best defensive team, like, and not like that, but they're like, they're super far ahead of where everyone else is. You know what I mean? Like, clearly the best defensive team, and he's clearly the best defense. Anyway, that's my
absolutely. So Chelsea, looking around the rest of the ACC, UVA obviously a front runner after the couple of big wins over Tech, UNC, Syracuse, obviously. Do you think Duke is their main competition? Miami was getting a lot of chatter, but then they lost to Georgia Tech, who is probably terrible. Is Clemson for real? I'm curious to hear your thoughts about some of the other top teams.
Yeah, no, it'll be interesting to see. To be completely honest, I'm not like as well versed on the ACC on the men's side. So it'll be interesting to see. I know they have to play at Florida State, and I know that's just a tough place to play, and they're at Miami. So those are both road games. Those will be, and Duke too. Those will be really big tests, I think. I feel like Duke's always a good matchup. You know, it's like a clash of two styles.
Yeah.
And getting Clemson at home will be good. I don't know. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Starting off 4-0 is huge, and taking care of business at home, getting a good win on the road. Definitely have some challenges. Wake Forest played UNC tight. So, like, you know, I don't know, and I'm sure that coaches would tell you too. It's like, at least on the women's side, you can't go, you don't look at your schedule and like just check off automatic wins anymore.
Sure.
On the women's side, at least with the way that the league has just grown and gotten even tougher with Syracuse, Louisville, Notre Dame, Pittsburgh. So it's a grind and it's tough, but I think Virginia has definitely exceeded expectations at this point in the season from where they were starting in preseason, at least from national media attention, not being ranked, all of that. And even I think, you know, looking at their non-conference, you know, before the start of ACC, like once non-conference was over, people kind of looked and said, are we going to be ready? Like was our non-conference schedule tough enough? Did we play enough? And obviously we, you know, we have been, so that's been encouraging to see.
Yeah,
absolutely.
This season has been fun. This is where I love seeing a lot of people are saying now, like, guys, no, seriously, Virginia's fun to watch. Like, you should turn it on. Like, and it's not any sarcastic, like, only if you like to watch paint dry type of way. So it's kind of fun.
Yeah.
Something you said about awareness earlier really hit with me, because that's, I think, they've looked more aware of their surroundings, and I'm speaking entirely offensively. Well, and defensively, because like I said, everything they do is pretty solid, but offensively they seem to like know where the guy's going to go next and like where the pass is going to go. And this whole sequence, like, yes, the DeAndre dunk on Barry was amazing, and I've watched it like a million times, but the one that I like will go back and that I really enjoyed from that game was the extra pass by Devin, like the pass to Devin, but I think by Kyle, and then under the basket pass from Devin to Bomadi for the dunk. Like, that just to me shows what this offense is. Like, they're not holding the ball and playing four corners and like standing around until there's 10 seconds left on the shot clock. There's cuts There's screens. I love it. I'm super excited.
Yeah.
So as a Virginian, that means I'm terrified at all times.
Yeah. And I'll just say too, and this might be way too like, you know, life lesson taking things too far type thing. But when we talk about, like, you talk about all these little things, like the details, the patience, the selflessness, you know, all those pillars, when you talk about a guy like Devin Hall or Jack, the red shirt guys, or even the seniors like Isaiah, there's just that patience. They had to, they had to wait, and now they're seeing, you know, the fruits of their labor and their fruits of their patience. And all along they had a coach and a mentor telling them, stay the course, you know, be patient. And then even on the very like simplistic level of make the extra pass, don't care about your stats, you know, play defense and be committed to it. All of these little things, I can only imagine the way that like 5 years from now, whether Devin goes on to play in the NBA or not, you know, 10 years from now when he has a family or he's working in corporate or something like that, and he is having to be really patient with something or having to put in a lot of extra time with something that, you know, he wished happened sooner. I can only imagine all of this stuff, because I know from experience having played, you know, and even seeing Tyler go through it too, the lessons that you learn from college sports and even beyond are insane. And it's so much bigger than the game itself. You take far more away from your time on the court. You take far more of it is about life things than it is basketball.
Yeah.
And so it is like a type of program where would be a cool survey or something or study to see if you followed the guys from Tony Bennett's program, you know, pick five from every roster from, you know, his first or couple first years through whenever he's here, and you follow them and check in and see what they're doing in like 5, 10, 15, 20 years. I think it would be a pretty cool study, maybe compared to some other schools. You know what I mean? I don't know how you would qualify that data, but
no one else would want to do this study, just us. We're like, no, seriously, let's check back in 10 years.
Get all the good answers.
Yeah, see if your guy's president of the United States. But yeah, and I remember when I first started covering, like the first year that I got to cover the team, and that was London's first year. So I got to I did three out of his 4 years, which was really cool. And
oh, cool.
I think talking to them the first time was kind of like doing post-game interviews, whatever. You're just kind of like, wow, they actually, like, they're not bullshitting you. Like when you know, sometimes you hear people talk to the media and you think they're going to be like a different person behind, like,
right,
when they're talking to each other, like, but it just legitimately is a sense of like, you know, they joke around with each other after the game. Or my favorite is like London was giving Malcolm crap after he made the game winner at Pitt. You know, like, and he was a first year, Malcolm's a third year, like basically third captain. He's like, tell him what you said, you know, that kind of thing. It's so cheesy, but it is, I agree. Like he brings in the high character guys and you can't help but root for them. But, so we're going to close out with some rapid fire. I'm going to ask you a series of questions or fun questions. And just your first thought or your first answer. Okay. You ready?
Okay.
All right. Favorite place to eat in Charlottesville?
Bodo's.
All right. Go-to order at Bodo's.
Ham, egg, and American on an everything bagel.
Ooh, nice. All right. Favorite person to call a game with?
I have to say Channing, but Tom Wormy might be the second one. He's just professional.
Awesome. If you could go back and be on any other sports team at UVA, which would you choose?
Oh, I have always said women's soccer for this answer, just because I think that would be really cool.
It would be, yeah. Best dining hall on grounds?
Newcomb.
Yes.
Interesting take.
All right, and then last, and you cannot use the person you're married to. Coolest athlete at UVA you know?
Monica Wright, probably.
Stuff.
That's awesome. That works. Yeah, I was like, I'll give you the out so you don't have to say Tyler.
Okay. Thanks. No, he is the coolest. That's a hard one.
Well, I mean, I can't, seriously, like, this was so much fun. I could pick your brains for another, you know, 2 or 3 hours minimum. I just think I love I think you do great on the call. So this is my suck up moment. I think that's why I was like, we gotta get Chelsea on. This is so fun. So thank you for being our first.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. Yeah. It's been fun. It's been so fun to get to be here and get to stay involved in the game of basketball kind of through this outlet of covering it and broadcasting. And then with this being the first year I've gotten to do on the men's side, and it's been an absolute blast. So I'm happy to talk about it anytime. It's a passion of mine, and I've really enjoyed it. So thanks for having me on.